Calling this to order. Well, she told me to do it.
Well, I did.
I was being very nice until she told me to hammer, didn't you?
Yeah, I thought so too.
Oh! Is that your dog calling you?
I don't recognize that number. It's somebody selling me a cemetery plot.
Well, if it rings again, you might need it.
Yeah, well, I've got it. I don't know why I had it on. Normally, it just vibrates there.
So you went home?
Your finger hit it.
Oh, when I said to the IT room and they down in the mouse chair.
Oh, my God. Knowingly. I'm glad it did it.
That's an open invitation to go down there. So I took advantage of it.
Manny, you feel upside down today? KUA is upside down.
I mean, that's because I'm stressful. I'm in stress.
No. Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
Man, how are you, directors?
Hello
good to see everybody.
Good to see you.
It's good to be seen, especially after today. I've got some news that on of all days, I can't believe that it happened, but we had an operation on 23212, which impacted me, you, and you. It had a contractor, not our contractor, the county had a contractor out there doing some work by the
bridge.
By the bridge, you've got it. And they had a Traco that backed up into the line. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me.
Of all days,
why today?
That's why we had that out. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, but the power's been restored, so I'm pleased to be able to tell you that. I also want to say something before we begin. For all of my E&O employees that have started streaming this, we've got a lot of work to do, and y'all should be working and not streaming this video. So.
You're tugging at my heart. Okay, well, welcome. We'd like you to spend 5-10 minutes giving us your views on things, your opening statement.
Okay. You know, how I came into this industry is somewhat uncommon for a utility executive. Unlike most utility executives that come into the industry in some sort of professional capacity, like an engineer or accountant or something like that, I started out my career as a technician on the front lines while I was completing my bachelor's degree in electrical engineering at Florida State University. I was fortunate enough at the time to be assigned to the system protection area of the utility that in and of itself probably provides the greatest exposure to utility operations because you touch on everything, generation, transmission, distribution. But I also was in the unique position of being able to see the operations from the perspective of our frontline workers. Not everyone gets to see that. And I was able to see the challenges that they go through in constructing and operating and maintaining our facilities. So I've learned a lot from those folks. But I also made some mistakes. I recall shortly after finishing my engineering degree, I got what my grandmother would have called a big head, right? And so I thought that I was in a position to make some decisions better than some of those folks that had taught me so much the last couple of years. And obviously it didn't go over so well with some of them. And you know what they did? They let me fail. And it was a lesson that I'm glad I learned early in my career, because if I didn't learn it early in my career, I wouldn't be here today. They said, well, if Brian thinks he knows it all, let's let him learn the hard way. And I did. But I also realized at that time that if I was ever going to be successful in this industry and lead people, that I was going to have to learn to do a couple of things. I was going to have to become a better listener. I was going to have to find a way to embrace criticism. I was going to have to treat people with respect. And I was going to have to humble myself. I was able to successfully do that, and I learned that lesson early in my career. And I think in part, that's why people follow me today. Ultimately, I was able to repair some of the relationships that I damaged early in my career, right after graduation, and some of those folks are some of my closest confidants today. But ultimately, I was given the reins to that group and led that group through probably what was the most important technological advance that the industry had seen in decades, right? We changed out all of the system protection for the utility, including generation assets, and automated the entire system. As we were wrapping that project up, the industry was beginning to move towards some federally mandated reliability standards. And the general manager at the utility at the time had recognized the work that I had done in system protection, and he said, "Hey, Brian, how would you be willing to serve in this capacity and head up this new division, heading the utilities compliance division?" I said, "Sure," and assumed responsibility for compliance with thousands of standards across the organization's generation, transmission, and distribution assets. I was able to lead the organization successfully lead the organization through its first operational and planning audit and cybersecurity audit there in Tallahassee. And I helped shape Tallahassee's compliance posture that foundation is still there today. After that, I had the opportunity to move to the energy delivery division within the utility and head up that group. That was a challenging experience because there were a number of delivery projects that were backlogged. They just weren't getting done. And several of them were critical to our ability to serve our customers in various portions of the service territory. All of those projects presented their challenges. Some of them were political. Some of them were citizen opposition to the project. Some of them were funding. Some of them were regulatory related. But I had to work through those obstacles, and I was successfully able to move those critical projects forward and get the bulk of them done before I came here to KUA. But I think the most important thing that I was able to do in that role was the culture change that I was able to help facilitate that led to increased productivity, an increase in employee morale, just to name a few things. I have had the privilege to work directly for three different general managers in my career. And I have learned a lot of things from them. I've learned some things not to do. But because of that, I've been able to be involved in some major strategic decisions for utilities. I've been able to be involved in some major customer issues. And I've been able to lead some major utility projects. I've also had the opportunity in my career to go and work for investor-owned utilities. I ultimately decided not to do that because I felt that public power was the fit for me, because I enjoy seeing the work that I do enrich the quality of life for folks in the community that I'm serving. And so all of that experience, all of those lessons learned, have prepared me for this very moment in my career today.
I have a follow-up.
Yes, ma'am.
To something you said. How did you change the dynamics? You said you went in and you were able to change the dynamics. What did you do, and how did you do it?
It was about creating an environment that supports innovation and creativity, and not handcuff people, allow people to be creative, empower them to make decisions with some guidelines, you will find that when you do that, all sorts of good things happen, and people will work for you.
Okay, very good. Ethel, do you have a question?
Welcome to the interview session.
Thank you.
If you become our general manager, how would you involve your staff in daily operations and assist them to prepare for their next level of responsibility?
One of the primary roles of any leader is making sure they're developing those folks that are under their charge. You got to do it. Far too often, when we're filling vacancies, we find folks that they don't know this or they don't know that, they don't have this, they don't have that. For me, that's a reflection of a negative reflection on the leadership that they're in, that they've been under, because we should be continuously developing people. So directly to your point, I would provide opportunities for people to further develop in areas where there's the greatest need. That may be through cross-training, that may be providing some other developmental opportunity.
Right. Ray, I think you're up next.
As you see, we all have to put on our glasses.
Fine.
Sorry about that.
Is this
yes, it is.
Okay. I remember Jose's mayor's.
He'd slap your hands if you did. So.
If you were given the position of a CEO, how would you analyze the capabilities of the existing staff?
Okay. So I've been here over 3.5 years now, and I've been able to work directly with every single department, every single vice president. I will tell you that each of them are extremely knowledgeable and capable and experts in their area. I've also been able to see where their strengths and their weaknesses are. Along the same lines as the previous question, how would I analyze that? By observing, and then once I've identified those, providing opportunities for them to grow in those areas where they can stand to realize the best, more growth.
I have another follow-up, because but how do you think the other VPs would feel if you get this position? Would they be able to work with you? And if somebody else got the position, would it be the same way?
Absolutely. I'll answer the former first. While I feel that I'm the best candidate for the job, if this board selected someone else, I'm going to do the things that I've been doing and support that general manager and make sure that he or she succeeds. That's my job. How would the other department heads feel if it were me? I think that I have been able to develop strong relationships with the other vice presidents here at KUA. In fact, I'll be honest with you, part of my preparation for this interview was going to each of them and asking questions, confirming things that I thought that I already knew, but I wanted to hear from them. And make sure that that I was understanding them correctly. I wanted to make sure that I was understanding what their needs are. So I did that as part of my my preparation for this interview.
Very good, Kevin.
And my question goes right along with that. And if the CEO is the central position, but all the vice presidents are certainly the extension of the CEO, kind of how would you see your expertise, your strengths, and your weaknesses in the different areas? Where have you learned the skills in those areas? And have you had any oversight duties for areas other than yours?
No, my career has been spent for the most part in energy delivery, with touching on all of the other functional areas. Being in delivery, you are a major contributor or have major impacts on all of the other areas. So I've dealt with them both here and back in Tallahassee on a host of issues. So it is not uncommon for me to know the answer or response that I'm going to get from a department prior to me consulting with my peer department head because of the exposure that I've had. I'll give you an example of this. I have never directly manage our HR functions, okay? But I have had enough dealings with issues and work through issues related to personnel, safety, risk management, that I'm familiar with their operations and practices. And a lot of times when I'm going to them, it's, yeah, Brian, that's right, you're on the right track. Even in areas where I'm not as strong, and I will say IT is probably one of the areas I'm not strongest, for the simple fact that their technology is constantly changing. And unless you're there doing it every day, it's hard to stay abreast of the most current technologies. But we've got a great VP in Jeff Gray. He and I have got a great working relationship. I can't believe I just complimented Jeff, but we've got a great working relationship. And when you've got good relationships with your peers, it makes it easy to work through those tough issues.
Okay, who's Manny?
That's me. As general manager, what would your first 100 days look like, or what would you do, in other words, first 100 days?
I would definitely be spending some time with each of you, understanding what your expectations of me are, and what your expectations of the direction of the organization are. I'm going to spend a lot of time with my executive staff, making sure that we're all on the same sheet of music and headed in the same direction. I would review their current goals and make sure they align with any direction that I've got from y'all. I would probably also hold a series of all hands meetings to allow the other folks in the organization to ask questions of me, so that they have the opportunity to hear from me and I can address any questions or concerns that they may have.
Jose?
I was falling asleep to one. Now you, lunch. briefly explain your familiarity or experience with our power supply resources and our relationship with FMPA.
Okay. Let me talk about my experience and then I'll talk about the relationship, okay? A part of my current responsibilities as the Vice President of Engineering and Operation is the operation and maintenance of the relaying and metering functions out there at Kane Island for all of the units. I'm also responsible for the transmission facilities out there. I interact with FMPA on a host of issues. Most recently, I've been in a negotiation with FMPA and Duke for the need to upgrade one of the transmission facilities at that power plant. I also recently participated in conjunction with FMPA on a task force that was looking at the possibility of expanding the power pool. Now, we ultimately decided to an investor-owned utility. We ultimately decided not to do that because there wasn't enough benefit for the participants. Okay. With respect to the relationship between KUA and FMPA, we are a participant in the All Requirements Project. We did that back in 2002. As a result of that, we essentially divested ourselves of the resources out there. Now, we operate and we maintain them through a management agreement that FMPA fully funds. The staff that's out there, they're KUA staff, but they're funded by FMPA. And the reason we joined the All Requirements Project was to realize some economies of scale for our ratepayers. And it served us well. We receive a capacity credit on our energy bill from FMPA for the interest that we had in the units out there. And we will continue to receive those capacity credits through the life of those units until they're retired.
Okay. What examples can you offer as evidence of your successful leadership style and skills?
I'll just focus on my time here at KUA for the 3.5 years, because I think we've done some wonderful stuff. I have had the privilege of leading a combined department here at KUA, replacing two vice presidents that had over 60 years of experience in the industry. And we've accomplished a lot in a short period of time. We have improve reliability for our customers through system improvements and expansion efforts. We have extended coverage in our service territory and improved our response and repair times for our customers. We have put in place new procedures to make it easier for our customers to do business with us. We have reached out to our schools and provided opportunities for the youth in our community to learn more about our business and career opportunities. We have modified our approach to storm readiness to ensure that the very best possible response for our customers. We've helped our neighbors in need following natural disasters. We've won awards and have been recognized as best in class. All of this would not have been possible if I wasn't able to garner the support of the people that work for me and get them to buy in to the vision that I had for the way things could be. And it's not easy. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of communicating. It's a lot of explaining to people why we're doing what we're doing. But once you get them to buy in, and once you create an environment that's that encourages innovation and creativity, great things happen. People will come up with solutions to problems that you never thought of, and they'll be excited about it, and they will want to help you get to where you want to be, not because you're the boss, but because they bought into the vision. And they're not resisting you. And that's what I've been trying to do here at KUA in my time here.
Okay. You know, I've been listening here, forgot where we were. Is it your turn? Yes, I think that was my question. I'm listening to you. That's why I'm losing track here.
What is your vision of the future of the energy industry, and how do utilities such as KUA fit into this vision?
I'm sure that I'm going to say some things very similar that you've heard from other candidates, because I think it's just where the industry is headed. I think we're going to continue to see penetration in residential rooftop solar. I think we're going to see utilities continue to move forward with utility scale community solar projects, much like the one we're undertaking now. I think we're going to see advancements in battery storage technology, and all of that's going to happen over a 10-15 year time frame. How does KUA position itself to respond to that? I think we're doing some of the stuff now. You guys know that I'm in the process of upgrading some of our aged infrastructure. We need to do that to be ready for these technologies, because it's all built on top of the distribution, the delivery system. So we're working on that. We're also in discussions with some of the property owners just north of this facility to possibly acquire some land for future expansion. Don't quite know what that is yet, but at least we will be in a position to be ready to respond once we get there.
Thank you. Okay, Greg.
Brian, what major changes do you anticipate in the electric industry over the next 5 years?
Over the next 5 years, I think we're going to continue to see some modernization and automation on the delivery side of our business. We've done a lot of that, but I think there's still some stuff to be done, and I think it's short term. I think it's within the 5 years. I know that we've got plans for it here at KUA within the next 5 years to automate and do some automation and realize some reliability improvements through that. I think that, again, we're going to see some more utility scale solar by utilities across the nation. And I think you're going to start to see people beginning to prepare their workforce for the changes that they're anticipating.
Kathleen.
Mm-hmm. Will you tell us a little about the staff that you manage or that you have managed in the past, kind of the number of employees and the breakdown between managers, supervisors, professional, clerical, and first-line craft professional people?
Okay. Currently, I lead a department just over 100 people across 6 divisions. Those people are either administrative in nature, professional, or craft. I don't know the specific numbers off the top of my head, but I will tell you, that the bulk of the people are going to be craft. They're going to be our linemen, our technicians, those type of people that are out there operating and maintaining our system. The groups that I've managed in the past are going to have a very similar structure and numbers. It may not be 100 people I was managing. May have been 30 or 40, but you're going to have a combination of those same type class professionals in those areas.
Manny?
Fine, if I went and spoke to your current subordinates.
Please don't.
What would they say about your leadership and your management style?
It's funny because I just went through my performance review last month, and I can tell you what they said. I'll be paraphrasing, but they will tell you that I'm goal-oriented, I set a good example of the expectations that we expect of our employees here at KUA, that I am team-oriented, and I put the organization's success and team success before my own, to name a few, but I think it would be mostly positive.
Was it?
All right, Brian. What is your philosophy on energy conservation and efficiency? And can you provide examples of programs implemented under your direction that demonstrates the application of your philosophy?
Okay. Energy efficiency and conservation is something that utilities just need to do because it's the right thing to do. And there are benefits for our customers, and there are also benefits for the utility. And I know that seems a little funny because you're saying, hey, let's educate our customers on how to use less of our product. And that seems a little backwards. But I will tell you that if through energy conservation and efficiency, if our customers can save a few more dollars and keep a few more dollars in their pocket and go out to a meal with their family or see a movie or pay a bill, then it's the right thing to do because it's improving their quality of life, which is why we're here. On the utility side, if you realize enough efficiencies, you may be able to defer the costs associated with the next need of generation. You may be able to. So there are benefits to both sides. With respect to what projects I have implemented, I'm in the process of leading a utility-wide project right now that once completely deployed is going to provide our customers with all the tools that they're going to need to become better users of our product. And that project is AMI.
Good. Brian, you've been on your new job now for 3 months or so, and you've discovered that some of the long-term employees are passively resistant to your strategic direction and your cultural change initiatives. They're talking the talk, but they're not walking the walk. What would you do? What approach would you take? And what are your options?
I think the first thing that I would do is remind those employees of the expectation that I have of them, that they come to me when they have a problem so that we can work through it and not send mixed messages into the workplace. That'd be the first thing I would do. Second thing I would do would be to seek to understand why they're resisting the change. There may be a valid reason that I'm not seeing, but they need to communicate that to me. I would have discussions with them to see if I can get them on board with the change. But I will tell them the very same thing that I have told so many of my direct reports, my current direct reports included, is that you may not always agree with decisions that the organization makes. Just natural, we're people. We may not agree. But if you are a supervisor, it is your responsibility, and you signed up for it. It is your responsibility to get behind that decision once it's made. And go out there and implement it as if it were your own.
And so what options do you have if it's not done?
Well, if it's not done, I would have discussions with the employee to see if I could get them on board. If I can't, and telling them that, that's my expectation of you as a supervisor, well, then we need to have a whole other conversation.
Okay. Ethel?
Brian, tell us about a responsibility in your current job or previous position that you really enjoyed and one that you did not enjoy.
I enjoy solving problems. I enjoy working with my teams through issues, collaborating to come up with creative solutions. I also enjoy customer engagement and being able to solve their issues. For me, those are the most rewarding aspects of the job. What I enjoy the least, quite honestly, is dealing with some of the disciplinary issues and disciplining folks when they've done something wrong. There aren't too many people when I was at Tallahassee, nor here that I don't know and haven't formed a relationship with. And so when you form relationships with people and then they do something that's not right, it's not a fun thing to have to do what's necessary. It's just not, and I don't enjoy it, but I do it.
Thank you. Ray?
Let's see. How would you plan to ensure KUA's sustainability through succession planning?
Yeah. I think I would do some of the things that we're getting ready to do in my current department, that is identifying those positions or classifications that are critical to our operations, okay? Providing people with opportunities to learn and grow into those positions. I got to be careful because I feel Wilbur over there cringing, because you have to be careful how you do this, because you can't say Kathleen's next in line. It has to be equitable, right? And so you have to provide opportunities for everyone. That makes it a little more challenging. But I would provide opportunities for people to cross train and do other things where we can do it. Part of what keeps our costs down and gives us value is that we have a really lean bench here at KUA. And so if we take someone off and allow them to do something over here, well, something over here is not getting done. So we just have to be careful how we do it. And we're kind of working through some of that now. I've got some of that cross training in place now. We've got engineers working in our operations department, learning that side of the business, so that when opportunities to lead or opportunities for increased responsibility present themselves, people are prepared to step in. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, you can. As long as it's a follow-up.
Okay. With today's succession planning here at KUA, which I know you've been a participant of, what change or changes would you like to see?
I think, and what we've got in place is good. It's a good start. I would like to see, especially at the executive level, I'd like to see folks have opportunities to serve in other areas. It's challenging because someone still has to do this job, but I'd love to see person A gain operational experience. I'd love to see person C spend time in customer service. I think it makes people more well-rounded. We just have to figure out how we make it happen.
Well, Kathleen?
Yeah, if you're selected as a general manager, what would KUA look like 10 years from now under your leadership?
Well, we're still providing great customer service and high reliability at the same level or better. Our workforce has probably evolved and are doing things that they may not have done in the past. We may be providing services that we're not currently providing today. It's hard to say because a lot of the things that we're talking about, we don't know. We really don't know the timing. We know they're coming, but we don't know how rapidly they're coming. And so, it's really hard to say. But I think that we're well on our way to positioning ourselves for those changes today.
A follow up on you said it's very difficult to predict it, mm-hmm. but. So don't predict it. What's in your mind? What's going on that you see? No predictions.
Sure.
We won't hold you to anything.
Sure. Okay. I think that there are things that we need to explore. If there's a desire on a part of our customers, for example, less than 1,500 feet away from this facility, Florida Gas Transmission recently installed a pipeline. Do we need to be looking at whether or not we provide that service to our customer? Is there the demand? I don't know. But we certainly need to study it because it's an option for another revenue source for the organization. But there are things that are out there that I think that we should be at least looking at very least.
Another follow-up, would you empower your team to be out there looking? You can't see everything.
Absolutely.
So you would be encouraging your team to look for
Absolutely.
More innovative things to
Absolutely.
Do?
Absolutely.
Thank you. There's been so many follow-ups. Who's is it next?
Is it Jerry? Is that?
Manny.
My turn.
Yeah. Kathleen, you asked it, right?
Well, you would laugh.
Oh, you're right. I'm thinking after Manny. You comes out.
Well, I'm sorry. There were just
know.
A couple that
Who's
followed
on
first.
First.
Who's on first? As general manager, will you have a problem with any of the individual board members approaching your vice presidents or the employees here at KUA or vice versa?
No, provided that they keep me informed and that they're adhering to the policies approved by the directors approved by this board.
Follow which what policies are you
there? We've got a policy and a board directive. I apologize, a board directive in place that speaks to staff board interactions. Now, if there is I think as long as that directive is in place, we need to be adhering by it. Otherwise, why do we have it?
Follow-up, what is the directive?
On operational issues, those operational issues go through the president and general manager unless delegated by the president and general manager.
Okay. Thank you. Jose.
Well, and Brian, you know that this board is appointed by the city commissioner and its mm-hmm. mayor. And I will hope that never this board will pass that line of micromanaging the employees of KUA, because that is the duty of the CEO of this company. This board is here to give directions to the CEO, what they would like to see him do with his staff. Having that in mind, please tell us about your experience working with a governing body such as the board of directors.
Okay. During my time in Tallahassee, I worked with the city commission there in a very similar fashion as I operate with you guys, providing updates on projects, giving presentations. I also did it for the Citizens Advisory Committee there in Tallahassee, which is an advisory committee that's solely focused on utilities, because the city commission there in Tallahassee is not, it's the entire city umbrella. And so I provided those sorts of things, very similar to what I do here for this board.
As a follow-up to that, what is your experience working with elected officials such as federal and state legislatures, federal and state administrations, and local governing bodies?
Okay. I interacted with state and federal regulators in my role in Tallahassee as the compliance manager. I also did so here when I first got here as the vice president of system compliance and operations, working with FERC, NERC, and the FRCC.
I like that, FERC, NERC. M-I-C-K-E-Y.
M-O-U-S-C.
Well, you know that, huh, right?
I've got young kids.
Brian, would you describe a specific difficult personnel issue that you've addressed, such as harassment, discrimination, or other improper activity, what you did, the outcome, and what you learned from it?
Okay. I can recall an instance where I had an employee in a supervisory capacity who had a history of abrasive interactions with other coworkers. And the organization had done everything that it could to counsel, provide training to that employee to help change the behavior. On one particular day, this employee had made a comment to a subordinate employee that had some racial undertones. That subordinate was uncomfortable and told that supervisory employee, "Hey, what you said was inappropriate." Later that same day, while out in working in the field near energized equipment, that same supervisory employee engaged the subordinate employee again in a discussion that could have racial undertones could have been inferred. That subordinate became upset, and rightfully so, and reported it to HR. We investigated the issue, and I determined that given the history with this employee, we were moving forward with discipline up to and including termination. This employee elected to leave the organization prior to us being able to implement the discipline, but we have a zero tolerance for that sort of thing. Now, that's an extreme case, but I think that you can apply discipline in ways that also have positive outcomes for the employee and the organization. I'll give you another example. I had an employee that violated some of our personnel operating procedures. The offense was severe enough that it could have been terminal, okay? And there were folks within the organization who wanted me to terminate this particular employee, but I took a step back. I considered the employee's history and their performance, and I asked myself, I said, if I can correct the behavior, does this employee provide benefit to the organization and our customers? And I ultimately said, yes, yes, this employee does. And so I imposed a lesser discipline, and that employee today is a rising star. So.
Very good. Thank you. Yes. No, I've lost track. See, I'm so interested in what you're saying, I forget. You asked that question? Ethel, you did. I did.
Jose was
you
nice.
Did. Jose, I'm sorry. So
and
it's my question.
Follow-up.
Very good. Oh, yeah, that was my question you answered. I'm so involved in listening to you, I'm losing track. I'm not even your chairman over here.
Well, I would prefer that than you not listening to me. Then I'm really worried.
I will listen from now on. Okay.
Brian, if you are selected, do you plan to have someone replace you with internal candidates, or will you bring someone from outside?
I think there's something healthy about competition. We've got some talented folks within the organization that I've been preparing for this very reason. To be completely fair to our ratepayers, I think we've got an obligation to at least look and see what's out there, if for no other reason to confirm that we already have the right person in-house.
Thank you. Okay. Ray?
Brian, what are your career objectives, and how does becoming the president and general manager of KUA fulfill those objectives?
I want to lead a public power utility, and I want to do it in a community that I and my family feel comfortable in. I want KUA to be the last utility that I manage at. And so that's how it fits in to my career plan.
I'm done.
Manny.
I'm done.
We've all asked.
Yep.
All the questions have been asked.
Oh, wow.
Wilbur keeps us on track, so we dare not ask something that we're not supposed to ask.
Well, if you want some more.
No.
We're not allowed.
Do we have any follow-ups?
Follow-ups.
Yeah.
Brian, then would you at this point give us a closing argument?
Or any questions for
or
us?
Or any questions for us, if you have questions for us.
Be careful taking any question. Oh, we don't want a question.
Everything in my career, I have been given increased responsibility as I demonstrate my ability to manage certain things, and it's been progressive. And I think that that I've demonstrated my ability to lead teams, get things done, and I think that I am the best candidate for this position. I think that I am vested in this community. I am a KUA ratepayer. I think that's important because I live, work, and play in this community. Several of you on Christmas Eve experienced the power outage. Okay, guess what? I experienced that power outage as well.
Not me.
I'm vested in this community, and I look forward. I don't envy y'all and the position that you're in, having to make this difficult decision. I wish you well.
Do you have any questions for us?
No, ma'am.
Okay, if not, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
Madam Chair, don't adjourn the meeting yet. I want to make a statement with Brian.
Okay. We can't adjourn anyway because we have to make a decision.
Oh, that's right. We have one more.
Yeah.
Here we got another.
So we'll be done.
We have to make a decision whether we want to get out here earlier. Yeah. This is an hour and 15 minutes before the due.
Just
you get him here.
Yeah, but he's in the house, so.
He's right over there. We'll drag him by his ear.
2 minutes away. Oh. Mm-hmm.
The next one. Oh. We're dragging by his ear over here.
Okay. What do you want to say, Jose, before we...
I thought that we were done, but I can make the statement now. So as you guys know, tomorrow I'm going to be in Tallahassee. I'll be heading out at 7 o'clock mm-hmm. in the morning. Mm-hmm. I'm going to leave with Fred my score sheet. Since I'm not here tomorrow to be able to speak on why I rate who, whichever way, I just want this board to remember this, and I believe that we're all thinking the same thing. When we're looking at someone for this position, to me, it's got to be an individual that has been a long time in this business, that understands all the different capacities of how we could run this company. And so to me, the time and experience, well-rounded experience, is how I will rate my candidates. And I hope that this board thinks of that and goes in the same, follows the same direction.
We will take it under advisement.
Can I make a statement about our rating process, too, since we're here and
sure, we're discussing
on
it.
The books?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I want for us to avoid the situation of sitting here saying, here's one, here's two, here's three, down to number six, because you got winners and losers. And these, I don't mean losers, but you've got people all the way down. And I don't think that we want to put our employees in that position. So I'm suggesting that we all give our number one choice. And we'll be able to do that from the way you're leaving things too. See where we are. Who knows? Maybe we all agree. If not, go to our number two choice. I think we'll see some patterns. If we have to go to a number three choice, okay. But we would have surely some agreement of our top candidates without having to give a big long list. I just think when these people are going to be working together and potentially one of them's going to be the boss of the other one, I just am really uncomfortable about doing a rating sheet and adding up the points and saying, okay, here it is.
Well, points, no, but I see what you're saying. We do need it, some sort of chart to...
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. But...
well, where are we in... Can we do that? I mean, does that...
We're still using this chart.
We haven't been given one.
Well, remember, I have to fill mine out today when I leave, and I have to give it to Fred.
We didn't get one. I didn't get one.
Well, I think that's what's going
to
go.
I asked for mine because of that, because I have to fill mine out and give it to Fred. And tomorrow, Fred will read mine.
Okay.
Because I can't pass it to you guys.
No.
It's sunshine. So I'll give it to Fred, and he'll be the one to speak on my behalf of how I.
Okay.
And all we will need is in our head, here's my number one, and it'll get put into that chart, and we can look at all of ours number ones
we'll
up there.
We'll go one at a time.
One at a time.
Instead of having all the names up there, we'll have one name up there, right?
Mm. If we agree, then it stays there.
That's right.
And if we don't agree, then we continue.
Yep. And I don't see, surely that we would have some patterns by the time we get three of them up there at the very worst. And we could say, okay, well, then let's look at these top three and see if we can.
And I do understand what you're saying, because we do have a situation here where we've got four people in-house that are valuable to us, and we do not want them put in a position where they feel they're not valued.
Yeah, that's right.
Madam Chair, if we can we get comments from Carl on your experience in this matter? What would your opinion be on this?
I agree a lot with what Kathleen's saying, that you don't want the selection of the general manager to evolve into a personnel evaluation of your internal staff in public. I think that's unhealthy. What you might want to do, and a variation of what Kathleen said, is you might want to be thinking about your top three. Because somebody might, what'll happen is it'll become obvious there's a group that'll be eliminated, and you don't have to be getting into this discussion of, I don't like George because of X. Just get away from that and just talk about what you like about the candidates.
We say number one, and then we all give what our number one choice is.
Right.
Then we go number two, we give who our second choice is.
And maybe a pattern evolves, and that's as far as we go. And we discuss between the top two.
And on a more positive vein, you know, you may have, mayor's got somebody as number one, you have somebody as number two. And Kathleen has somebody as number three. So Kathleen says, well, I had him ranked number one for this reason, an advocate for the person that you think would be your first choice if they're not in the first group. And then come back and revisit the ranking again. Because the reality of life is you all have to agree. There has to be a vote, and everybody's got to agree. And then that way it gives a chance for everybody to have a say. If they don't pick the same number one, to advocate for who they think would be number one and why, rather than critique somebody why you don't want them.
Mm-hmm. So I really have three columns for the most part. One is just, it says 1, 2, 3, and you say names. No.
Well, you might have them in your mind, 1, 2, 3, but you do, what Kathleen says you do, does everybody have number one? So.
Okay, we all do one, and that maybe can be done, we're really right. lucky and all five of us.
And we don't
the
need a chart
person.
For that. That can be taken care of as
That's
we do
right.
it.
That's
well,
right.
So we just don't need a chart.
If you don't mind, I would like one of those charts that the mayor had. The reason being, because I'm going to rate them tonight myself. 1 through 6. So we'll go 1, and then if that, I want to be able to, I don't want to think about it tomorrow.
Yeah.
I want to be able to
I think
do that
you can
tonight.
Use that to help yourself.
Just to help. Yeah.
So if we can get one of them to everybody.
I'm yeah. sure we can get that
right. before we leave.
And if we do,
we got three people
not.
At the same
I would
time.
Use
Remember,
the,
I'm not going to be
I
here.
I would use the chart at the very least so for your own thought process.
Right.
You would want to use the chart because you're not going to be here to give it to Fred.
And we will use your chart.
We're going to use it because whatever you have, say you say number one, whoever it is, okay, if you're number one, then we'll compare.
And I just made my comment on whoever I choose
right.
in whatever pattern is because of the time and experience in all the
oh,
departments
that's what you said.
Of
yeah.
KUA.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if I could suggest too, since I suspect you're not going to have, well, I don't know, if we go for the last two interviews, you're going to have extra time at the end and you can talk about this.
There's only one more interview, I think.
Yeah, for an hour.
That's what I was going to say.
So why don't we pull them in now?
That was my idea after we had
yes
this
or no.
discussion. Is
well,
it would it be possible to bring the last one in so we could leave early?
We can give them the option to
That's
in.
What I mean.
So if it's with your direction,
well, have,
I will,
just meant before
have
we go tell them now, you can ask them if they'd be ready.
Yes, ma'am.
But don't tell them.
No, I'm not ready.
Because have we finished this?
Yeah.
But what if I can?
Because I don't want to be in the middle of this discussion.
Oh no, no.
Him,
no,
so.
No.
Mayor, if you have when you rank it, you say my number one is X, I support for this reason. My number two is Y, I support for this reason or whatever.
Well, it's the same comments.
In essence, it's your own advocacy.
It's
the
same.
Rank.
It's the same comments that I made on how I'm going to rate them, and it's by overall experience, and
okay.
that will be 1, 2, and 3. And it's
no,
overall experience.
Thank you. We'll do it. First
okay.
of all, pay attention to what you're saying.
Are we, it should
be a tough decision.
Are we assuming unanimous or majority?
It should be. I would hope that once we get to a point of majority, it will become unanimous.
Yeah.
Because I do not think we can offer any job to anybody if they know that it's not unanimous. It would be impossible for them to work with the board.
Yeah.
So it has to be unanimous. When it comes out of here, all of us have to be in agreement.
Yeah,
and that's my
right.
Is that,
no, no, it makes sense. Legally, we could do 3-2.
We could do anything
but
we want.
But it makes sense what you're saying.
Well,
we have
yeah.
to protect the integrity
oh, yeah.
of the company.
Absolutely.
And this is the person that's going to lead this company.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be the person that will have to lead it with the other ones following.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to make sure that there's no enemies.
That the whole board supports
you. Just think of a newspaper saying, board can't decide, they picked the 2-3. That's not wasn't
yeah.
unanimous. You
yeah.
don't want that kind of...
No, no,
you
know? I agree.
And
no, it should be unanimous.
I would suspect that going a line at a time, I would suspect that going a line at a time will help us build consensus anyhow, because... How much difference is there between 1 and 2 or 2 and 3? And, you know, a vote for somebody is not a vote against somebody, I don't
right.
think.
If I can make one last comment, I would also, in your thought process, separate the difference between preference and can't support.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so we're calling him?
Yes, ma'am. I can get it. I'll see what the option is. He may say he
I know. What is Jim? Jim, do you have something for us? Or?
Between Kathleen Backer and Letitia and I, we have took the liberty of putting this together for what you were just discussing.
That's the one you have ready, right?
No, it's a little bit different.
A little bit different?
Yeah, it's for this.
I think Ray needs one, too.
Here you go, Ray.
She don't need one.
Well, that's not what we really think about, but that's okay. To help us.
So you want us to rate him A, B, C, D, and F?
No, no. That A is, this is just for the ease of Letitia putting them in as you
It's first say, place, of, second instead, place.
Yeah, instead of names.
Instead of Brian, let's say, you'd say, mm-hmm. What's your first place? One's A, C, D, F.
Or write out the whole name if you want to.
I want to give them a letter grade.
No, it's not a letter grade. A letter that's grade. A convenience.
No, but this was so simple and so good. You just put here 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Well, that's about what this is,
you,
too.
You can do it just on yours.
Do it
that
yours.
Way.
Do it your way.
They want to get the next candidate.
Oh, huh?
Yeah. Okay, yes. Mm-hmm. We're not having a discussion. You can use this or not use it, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
It kind of helps you organize your thoughts.
Exactly. Use it as
an official vote.
Exactly. Use it as a...
I would come in with it written out regardless.
Exactly. You know. Please come prepared.
I would forget some of
these.
Because
I don't want to monkey around tomorrow. We want to get this done. Unanimously.
Don't get that pencil in my eye.
Would you rather have this up your...
Be prepared for a couple of hours.
Yeah, be careful with the couple-hour thing, because then that means discussion on each candidate, and they could be watching. They could be watching your discussion.
They will be watching.
Yeah,
well, they will.
That's what I'm saying.
So, certainly.
Be careful on the discussion, not to, you know, not
make
a...
We need to change the name if there's not Brian anymore.
Send a message, a negative message.
No.
Jennifer?
I would never.
You still have Brian's name. I mean, Brian's name.
Personally, I believe that we fill this form out and we turn it over to either Carl or Fred. They review it, and they see what the ratings came in.
Whatever the law allows.
No, we'll do it. We'll do it our way.
Okay.
And I'm not going to practice law without a license on that one.
Well, that's why I said I threw it on the attorney real quick.
I'm so tired of these questions. I tell you what.
You forget away. You ask them much less.
What's really bad is if I really concentrate on them, I forget where the heck I am. You're listening, but like,
we need to just pass the gavel, and whoever asks the question,
that's
hold
good,
the gavel
that's fine.
Until they get the answer.
Hey, I'm all for that. I'm all for that. Yeah, because I get, I'm into it, and then I go, who has that question?
Pass the Coke can.
Yeah, you know, like putting a little poker chip in front of everybody. That's not a bad idea. Why don't we get
too late now?
No, we're going to use this. I'm just pass it on. That would be really confusing, wouldn't it?
It would confuse the candidate. Why do they keep passing that thing around?
What are they doing with that hockey puck?
He's ready.
Okay, great.
Let's go get him by the ears.
Hey, Carl. Great to see you, sir.
Great.
That's right. Absolutely. It's good to see you. Hey, how are you doing?
Well,
legal general counsel in place.
You have a different seat today.
Thank you.
We're going to go in there and pull you on the ears and bring you forward.
And whether I was ready or not.
Whether you're ready or not.
If I'm not ready by now, I'll never be ready, right?
Well, thank you for coming early. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for that.
This will get us out early, and you too.
That's excellent. I know it's been a long and excellent process, but
it's been fun, actually.
Excellent. Well, that's great. Well, how do you want me to start?
Have 5 to 10 minutes.
Okay.
To give us an overview of your thoughts, what you think's important, and just get that started with that.
Great. Okay. Excellent. Well, it's great to be here. I'm really, really excited and honored to be one of 6 people that you're considering for the CEO position of our beloved KUA. KUA is very precious to us and to our community. It's a great honor to be here. In my 16 and a half years as a vice president and a member of the executive staff, I've come across a number of difficult challenges. On August 7th, 2011, I received a phone call at 10 a.m. on a Sunday morning. One of our brand new transformers had exploded in one of our substations, with tragic and catastrophic result. I arrived at the scene just as the fire was being put out and as the media was arriving as well. With the CEO and other senior executive staff on vacation, out of town on vacation, conferences, retreats, not physically available, KUA needed someone senior on the scene to coordinate our immediate response. That person had to be me, given the situation. Over the next 24 hours, I would wear many different hats as we coped with the situation. Snap decisions had to be made. For example, there was a big mess associated with the explosion, and the rule with the mess is that the sooner you clean up, the sooner you get done cleaning up, and the less damage you have. Well, the site had not been released to us. Law enforcement and EMS had a lot to do that day. We weren't the only, we were a big problem, but not the only problem. And that formality had been missed. So the deputy superintendent asked me, Grant, what do? We got to get going. I said, just get going. And if there's any heat, I'll take it. Those are the kinds of things you have to decide in a moment like that. We also had to get counselors available to our employees who were most directly affected by the accident. We had to preserve the scene for evidentiary reasons because we knew litigation would be coming out of this. And finally, and from my perspective, you know, most anxiety ridden in a sense was we would have to face the media. And in 24 hours, we would have two press conferences. What I took from that more than anything else in that experience was that when you face something huge like that, you have to rely on the people around you. To be successful, to meet the challenge, you have to rely on your colleagues. You have to rely on their expertise. Chris Gent was at a conference. He was out of town at a conference, but he took time away from his conference to get me a communications plan so we could effectively communicate with the media. Cindy Herrera, our assistant vice president of benefits, got me the contact for counselors to come and help our employees. And our then safety coordinator and deputy superintendent of E&O were the ones that, with quick thinking, got right on the cleanup immediately. And that's what that experience taught me. When you have something unanticipated that's catastrophic like that, you have to face it. You have to be ready to be, you know, nimble and wear different hats. But you have to rely on the people around you to be successful. Some other challenges I've faced as FMEA's president of their board of directors, we had the Vero Beach problem, and that festering wound led to a lot of, as you all know, some very difficult legislation, harmful legislation, that folks tried to pass to either regulate or privatize all or a portion of our operations. With the help of our great lobbying team in Tallahassee, with policymakers like yourselves, we successfully met that challenge. Again, as a member of FMEA's executive committee, a huge challenge we faced recently was replacing Barry Moline, our very successful CEO at FMEA of 20 years. I do think that I and the other six members of the executive committee hit a home run with Amy Zubley. But all those experiences aside, the challenge that I think has defined me and my career came very early in my career. It came in 2004 when we were trying to restore from Hurricane Charley. And I was challenged with trying to help restore the faith of customers who had felt we had let them down. It was about 10 days into the hurricane, and by 10 days, most people had their power. And I got a phone call on my cell. Yeah, well, like I said, most. Not the most important, just most. But I got a call on my cell phone. Someone was able to get a hold of it, and good for him. And I answered and he said, "Hi Grant, my name's Gordon and a friend of mine gave me your number and I'm in quite a fix. I'm manager of an RV park. We have over 100 residents. Everyone around us has had power for days. We don't have power. Our water well, our lift station is tied to electricity. So my residents are miserable. They've been living in a state of nature for the past 10 days. I said, I'll be right over. So I go over and Gordon gave me a tour of the RV park. He told me about his experiences. They'd had several meetings with residents, and they were getting angry and angrier, understandably, as time went on and they weren't restored. And they were blaming him. They were saying, you're just not enough of a squeaky wheel. If you were shaking your fist more and really raising heck, we would have our power on. It's your fault, Gordon. So he told me all about that. And then he pointed to the bucket transformer from the pole that gave service to the park. He said, I think that fuse is open, and that's what caused the outage. And sure enough, it was a blown fuse. But our system indicated the whole area was restored, because this was 14, 15 years ago. We didn't have quite the ability to track it as we do now. So he told me all that, And I said, well, that's terrible, and I assure you we'll get your power on as soon as possible. And we did get the power on a couple hours later. I said, is there anything else you would like me, is there anything else I can do for you before I go? He goes, well, yes, Grant, as a matter of fact, there is. I have one resident who's made my life a living hell. She comes to these meetings, and she gets everybody all stirred up, and she's really, really angry, and she's really, really frustrated. I said, would you like me to talk to her? He said, yes. So we moseyed on over to her RV. I knocked on the door. She answered. I said, hi, ma'am, I'm from the power company. And she burst into tears. She was sobbing, sobbing with anguish, with relief. At last, maybe finally someone's going to get this situation resolved. And that experience, everybody, is the one that has stayed with me the longest as your general counsel. And if I'm lucky enough, it would be with me as your CEO. Our customers are our lifeblood. And protecting their quality of life is our sacred mission and our very reason for existence. Her anguish and her relief will stay with me forever. You've asked all of us about what skills that we bring to bear, we could bring to bear to the CEO position. I'm careful. I'm a lawyer. but I do like to see the long visionary picture when we have challenges. I don't like to think small. I don't panic when things go wrong. I think the substation accident is clear evidence of that. And I don't mind getting out of my comfort zone. I can do that as long as you don't ask me to do, you know, vector calculus or something. Most importantly, I'm accountable. I believe that I must always be accountable to each of you, our employees, and our customers. And I think you all have seen firsthand, I really enjoy building and fostering personal relationships with our elected officials and community stakeholders. I really relish that. And that's what I bring to the job. Those experiences, most importantly, the customer experience from Hurricane Charlie, and that skill set.
Thank you, Grant.
Thank you.
Ethel, would you like to start the questioning, please?
Sure. Hi, Grant.
Hi, Ethel.
Welcome to the interview process.
Great to be here.
If you become our general manager, how would you involve your staff in daily operations and assist them to prepare for the next level of responsibility?
Well, I think what you have to do is give them the autonomy to make their own decisions. I think the worst thing you can do is micromanage. The worst thing you can do with staff is try to tell them how to do their job. So I would ask them, what is it about your job that you enjoy the most? Where do you want the most latitude and leeway to make decisions and operate? And so that's what I'd start with, is finding out from them what they enjoy the most about their job and getting them the opportunity to do that more.
Ray?
Okay. Grant, assume that you are the new CEO. How would you analyze the capabilities of the existing staff?
Well, they're overwhelmingly positive, in my view. I think the reason we have an 87% customer satisfaction rating is because of the job that each and every vice president does. You know, I could go down the list and point out the strengths I see in every one of them. You look at Susan Poston, she took over a department that was languishing, quite frankly, in 2008. We went from write-offs that are over $3 million to a positive net write-off situation. You look at Larry Mattern, who's done a brilliant job representing us at FMPA. That's critical because most of our electric bill is tied up with that. You look at Brian Horton, who responded brilliantly with Hurricane Irma. He made sure he got all the resources ahead of time to be ready to respond. He didn't wait for things to happen, and we our customers were extremely happy with us because of that. You look at Chris Gent, and I can't think of a more talented person in NPR than Chris. Jeff Gray, we have never had a major cyber incident. Maybe we continue not to. That's because he's revolutionary. He's always thinking ahead. He's always looking at the next threat. We have Judy's just starting out as Central Services Vice President, but what she brought to her job before, which had a lot of those functions, was a relentless desire to please. And that's critical when you're responsible for making everyone in every department happy. I would be remiss if I didn't mention Dr. Wilbur Hill.
You want to leave?
You want to talk about you now?
He's incredible. We started basically 2 months apart from each other, and he takes the right mix of compassion, but no nonsense, logic to very difficult situations that we have sometimes with our employees, whether it's from building morale or having to go the disciplinary route. I don't want to forget anyone. You're not going to find anyone that works harder than Letitia to keep things running smooth at the executive level. I mean, I would come into the job feeling very fortunate because I think that everybody has a great deal of talent. There's room for improvement. I think some of that improvement will come from a CEO that inspires them to think outside the box that we sometimes think in and do some of these things that are more visionary in terms of whether it's new services or interacting with our customers more effective strategic planning, allowing more communication between direct reports and the board, those things. But I hope I didn't channel me if I missed any. And Larry Matter, my gosh, I mentioned him. But
you did.
Yeah, I'm just Kevin. Very lucky.
Kevin.
Well, Kevin. I won't say I saved the best for last, but I saved one of the best for last. But that's a sign. The fact that we're doing so well financially.
I don't mind. He's a newbie.
But he's a great newbie. I mean, he's a spectacular newbie. He works so well with everyone. You have to be diplomatic. When you're the numbers guy and the money guy, you have to tell people no. And he's very good at gently doing that and saying yes when you need to. But it's a team that doesn't really have a lot of weakness. I just think it needs to be inspired a little more.
I have a follow-up to that. We do have a strong team, and there's some other people on the team that have applied for this job. And how do you think they will respond if you become the new CEO? And how would you respond if one of them became the new CEO?
Well, first of all, each of them, I think, is eminently qualified to be your CEO. Each of them is immensely talented, and I think each of them would be successful in the job. So right off the bat, if one of them is the CEO, I'll take your question backwards if that's okay. Mm-hmm. If one of them is the CEO, I'll look forward to working with them and supporting them because your decision will be the right one, whatever it is. I think if I'm CEO, I think it's my job to make sure they understand that it could have been any of the four of us. Any of the four of us are qualified. They're all great, and I'm not going to succeed if they don't succeed. If we don't have each other's back, if we don't communicate well, if I don't inspire them, if I don't make them want to come to work every day, then I'm not going to succeed. So the first thing I would do is anything I could to reassure them that the difference, there's really no difference between us. We're just all, the board had a real tough decision. You get some really good candidates to choose from.
I think so too. Kathleen?
Well, I'm going to take you back through the vice presidents again.
Thank you.
But if you look at the CEO as kind of the central part of this establishment and all the vice presidents surrounding him, where do you see your areas of strength among their areas and weaknesses? How have you gained your knowledge in all those different areas? And have you ever had oversight duties in other areas?
Hey, I'll start with the strengths. I think the biggest strength I bring to the position is the fact that as general counsel, I have to interact deeply with every single department. So whether it's negotiating with other utilities, working on easements, reviewing contracts, procurement, sitting on the FRCC boards, an alternate to the FMPA board, dealing with angry customers that get too angry sometimes, dealing with employee issues, I think that I have a broad-based knowledge which helps me with my weakness. I think my obvious weakness is that I don't have a technical degree. You know, history major is a lot of fun, but it doesn't help you build substations, run a power plant, operate a CIS, customer information system, protect you from cyber threats. My experience has helped me get to the point where I can be a CEO. In terms of the strengths and weaknesses and interacting with my colleagues, well, first of all, you have to know what your weakness is. And I think that, you know, one of my weaknesses is clearly that I don't have the technical background. So I would have to rely on Brian and Kevin and Larry and Jeff and trust their advice. But they've already proven that they're very capable and able in what they do. I would like to think that in addition to knowing a lot about each department, that one of my strengths is that I've touched on it before, is I'm not a micromanager. I believe every person who reports to me should come to work with a sense that their job belongs to them. They have autonomy in their position. They have a chance to shine. And I don't need to take credit. I'm not interested in credit. If somebody does a great job, they should get the credit. And I think a good CEO passes the credit around and doesn't try to hold on to it, him or herself. I don't know if I've completely answered your question. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Manny.
Yeah, as general manager, what would your first 100 days look like? What would you do, in other words, during your first 100 days on the job?
Well, the first thing is I would sit down with each of my new direct reports and find out. I want to know what their goals, both for the organization, are, where they'd like to see the organization be in, say, 5 years, and then 2030. I've mentioned that. And what they want out of the job. What do you want in the next year, the next 5 years? And what do you want from me? And how can I make your job easier? So that's the first thing I'd want to do. The second thing is, Jim started this when he started in 1982. He had a meeting with all the employees. That's kind of been a tradition now in December, and I think we should stick with that. But what I would want to do is go to each department, work with their schedules, because we have a lot of people out in the field. But I want the opportunity in more discrete groups to meet with every employee. And I know most employees, but to reintroduce myself as their leader. In the first 100 days, we're going to have to look at our budget and how that relates to our strategic plan. And there are things I think we might wish to add or subtract from our strategic plan. So I'd be wanting to hear from you. What do you like about our strategic plan? What is you, a board member, don't like? And how can we go about establishing that? I presented some ideas in the presentation I submitted with my resume, and I would ask you about what, if any, of those ideas you like, because that's going to be, I'm going to start looking at that in the first 100 days. There are things that I think we need to do sooner rather than later. There are some things that can wait, but let's just get it all out there.
Okay. Jose?
All right, Grant. Briefly explain your familiarity, I hate that word, or experience with our power supply resource and our relationship with FMPA.
Well, it's arguably the most critical relationship we have. And Larry Mattern's done an outstanding job in making sure that relationship works for us. We belong to the All Requirements Project. And so as a result of that, all of our electricity, except for a little bit we have in the nuclear power plant, St. Lucie, has to be purchased by FMPA, even power that we generated at Kane Island. It all belongs to FMPA. And so it's critical. We're married for life. Okay, so it's really critical that we meaningfully participate in the board of directors. And as an alternate, I get to see firsthand how we participate. As an alternate, I'm allowed to ask questions and make statements, and I do. I don't hesitate. I work closely with Jody Finkley, the general counsel, on both legal issues and strategic issues. You know, I think that a big issue is coming as, you know, we're rolling out community solar. That's big. But how are we going to still deal with the PV solar threat? And FMPA, because we have an All Requirements Project contract with them, if we decide to deal with the PV, the rooftop solar, way in the manner that requires us to be involved in the business, we have to partner with them in that. So we're joined at the hip with FMPA. I think we have to continue our effective board representation at FMPA. I think we have to keep inspiring FMPA to go in the direction they're going with more, you know, as circumstances justify, invest in more community solar. You know, one thing I've noticed is that we've been very good about helping them prioritize or reprioritize things. When hedging was really hurting us with our customers, KUA is a very, very prominent voice, and we need to stop doing that. Our customers don't understand that the price of natural gas is low and their rates are still high because we're hedging. That doesn't work for us. We have to do things like that. When we started when they started signing up all requirements members and FMPA members for you know solar, we were very front and center saying, hey, we went to you. We said, how much do you want? And you all said, we want about 30 megawatts. We don't want just a pittance. We want a meaningful stake in this. And so I think we're doing well, but we have to continue that effective representation on the FMPA board.
Thank you.
Okay. You've been on this job now as CEO for a few months, and you've discovered that some of these people that you have great admiration for, they've been here a long time, are passively resistant to your strategic direction and culture change initiatives. They are talking the talk, but they're not walking the walk. What would you do? What approach would you take? And what are your options?
Well, first of all, I think that's my fault if that's what's going on. Because then I didn't effectively do what I told Director Ortega, that I was going to sit down and see what is it about their job that I can help them make more enjoyable, what goals they have for themselves and for the utility. So in a sense, I think that's my fault if that's happening. So I have to first look at myself, evaluate what am I doing wrong. I have to sit down with them and just have a candid discussion with them. What am I doing wrong? Why are you resisting? This isn't going to work. What is the roadblock for you to buy into to what we're doing? And here's why I say it's probably my fault if that's happening. I really benefited from the CPM program that I graduated from, and one of the things we discussed at length was change. And with change, employees, when they have dramatic change, and change of a CEO will do that, it's almost like a state of grief for some employees. And what you don't want to do is just rip the Band-Aid off. I think that's the worst thing you can do. It's just, it's my way or the highway. This is what we're going to do. You have to acknowledge that maybe they're scared of the future. They're somewhat fearful of the future. They are out of their comfort zone because you're on board. And I think you have to apply a good dollop of patience. You have to not assume that you know everything. You have to put your ego aside. And maybe you have to bolster the egos on the other side if you're having that problem. In the end, if you can't get the person to buy in, then you have to go in another direction. I would hope that would never come to that. Because I believe that is always the last resort. And that's my philosophy with every employee at KUA. When you have to fire someone, there's a failure on both sides.
Thank you so much. Ethel, back to you.
Okay. What is your vision of the future of the energy industry, and how do utilities such as KUA will fit into your vision?
Well, I think that for certain we're going to see more and more of our energy generated from renewable resources. And I'm willing to predict that we'll probably, even though we're more of a working class community, and we don't have the wealth that California and some of these other communities have that are really pushing rooftop solar, it's going to continue to grow, including in our service territory, because it is going to get cheaper. And I would expect to see that we'll have probably 5,000 net metering customers with rooftop solar. And I think that if we want to keep it at 5,000 and not have it be 10, 20, 30, or 40,000, which could really imperil our future, we're going to have to be involved with that business. I think that we're going to have to, I think it would be smart to survey some of our net metering customers if they'd be interested if KUA were installing solar panels, if KUA were maintaining your solar panels. Where we have neighborhoods that have clusters of PV, would you be interested in KUA setting up a microgrid and managing your energy? And when there's an outage, you can island off the grid till we're back on. Susan Posens had mentioned possibly insuring solar panels in one of our staff meetings. All credit to her. I think that we can't pretend that PV isn't a problem. You know, sometimes when I'm at FMPA, I mention rooftop solar, and some people just go, they roll their eyes a little bit. They go, community solar first and foremost. Yes, we want all our customers to take solar if they're going to take solar from us. But that's not realistic. We are going to have some customers that want the autonomy, that want the energy savings from rooftop. And I don't think we should just kiss that business goodbye. I think utilities of the future will stay involved in that part of the business. I would point out there was an article last week in the Orlando Sentinel, and OUC has hired a contractor to survey all the residential and commercial rooftop capacity in their service territory for potential PV rooftop deployment. If they're looking at that, I think we need to watch them very closely. The final thing I'd like to say about that is the Sacramento Municipal Utility District has something called the SMUD Energy Store. If you go on SMUD's website, they have this energy store, and they basically resell everything from Nest thermostats, Nest security cameras, Nest room sensors, individual electric vehicle charging stations, and they've become like the one-stop shop for everything energy in Sacramento. None of that's going to raise tremendous revenue in and of itself, but it saves their brand. It reminds people they're the ones to go to. I think that helps their traditional services and any other services they want to get into.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ray?
Grant, what major changes do you anticipate in the electric industry over the next 5 years?
The first one is the one I just mentioned. I think more and more customers are going to choose to go to the rooftop level. I do think that it's possible that in 2021, it's not a guarantee, but you may have a president in Congress that really wants to accelerate reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And if they do that, it just depends on what happens. And I'm not saying what I want to happen. I'm just saying it could happen. And so I'm willing to predict that, but even economically, more and more coal resources are going to be taken offline. You've seen that there's an effort out there through litigation to get more and more coal resources offline. We're going to have to rely less on natural gas because there's going to be more push for renewable resources. So the first thing I see is that you're going to have more solar farms like we're investing in and more rooftop solar. And we've talked about that. I think that with the energy industry and the deployment of, I think you're going to have a lot more electric vehicles. I think that we're going to have a lot more than one. I think in 5 years, we may need to have 10 to 20 or more electrical vehicle charging stations. And as one of the things we have to be ready for, if more people go to rooftop solar and more people are charging their cars, is how we manage our load and balance our load to meet that. It's not as simple as, well, I'm going to generate electricity today and everything's fine. The utility has to be able to meet its load needs. And so we're going to have to communicate very well with customers and keep a close track of where the energy industry is going to stay on top of that challenge. I think you're going to see more employees working for home effectively. We've really been very successful on the customer service end with that. I don't advocate that the whole company should work from home. I think that the customers demand and expect that their people are here. And one thing I do think in 5 years, you'll see even more utilities go away from in-person customer service, and that's not a development I support. I think we should always have the ability for a customer to come in and speak to someone face-to-face. And whether it's or even go out, I mean, with technology changes, we now have the ability, if we want, to go to BVL, go to Lakeside, go to Good Samaritan, go to downtown, and on a given day during the week, accept payments, talk to customers about their service. I think those opportunities are only going to increase for us to be more closely connected to our customers. So, and then with smart meter technology, I think you're going to see more and more customers doing everything remotely by their phones, and including managing their energy. You know, I'm going to turn the thermostat off. I'm going to turn the hot water heater off right now. I'm going to turn the thermostat down. And with our automated meter infrastructure, you're going to have an easier time doing that.
Thank you.
Kathleen?
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the staff you manage or have managed, the number of employees, a breakdown of managers, supervisors, professional, clerical, and first-line craft personnel.
Well, you've hit on my second glaring weakness.
Well, you know, we have to ask the same question to everybody.
No, of course. But I would like to talk about, right now, I'm it. But what I bring that you know, someone else might not be able to bring is that every time we have an employee that gets into trouble, I'm brought in. Yeah, if it looks like it's going to be anything from it's even includes some written reprimands, but you know, 1 day suspension, God forbid, to a possible termination. Wilbur and I work closely together with the department head, and given where employment law is today, with expert employment counsel. So I've seen directly where we've really done well. 99% of the time, our managers are fantastic, but every now and then we could have done a better job. There are areas we can improve. So I bring that experience to management. In terms of managing people directly, when I worked for my parents, I was operations manager. I was vice president. I was operations manager, sales manager, and general counsel. And there, we had anywhere from 5 to 7 programmers, key punchers, clerical staff. And then we had an independent sales force that I was also responsible for. And that experience has stayed with me, especially when it's a family business. You own it. Every success is magnified, and every bad day is magnified as well. But that's about it. One of the things you should know is that when I was in New Mexico, I was appointed to the Gaming Control Board. And it was a brand new regulatory agency. They just legalized off-reservation gambling. And we had no staff. So I and the other board members had to build a staff from scratch of a brand new government agency. And then several years ago, I was chairman of the board of directors of Family Services of Metro Orlando. They're the predecessor to Central Florida CVC, community-based care. We had 90 employees. We had a $250 million budget with DCF, and I was chair there from 2009 to 2013, and I worked very closely with the CEO and his direct reports to manage that agency. Thank
you. Manny?
This is going to go along the same lines of questions that we have to pose. What would current subordinates, and probably based on your statement, probably past subordinates, what would they say about your management and your leadership style?
I hope they would say that I let them do their job, that I allow them to attain a certain level of autonomy and ownership of their position, that they enjoy working for me because I trust them, and I don't get my fingers in everything they're doing. I hope they see that I lead by example, that if something goes wrong, I'm not going to point the finger at them. I'll own it. I'm the CEO. The buck does stop here. It has to. If there's something they did, we'll deal with that one-on-one. I would like to think they think that I'm not afraid to make decisions, that I'm decisive, especially when the time calls for it. I hope they'd say I'm compassionate, that I care. I really care about them as human beings, as people. I want them to enjoy coming to work here. I want them to be proud of KUA.
Thank you.
Jose?
What is your philosophy on energy conservation and efficiency? And can you provide examples of programs implemented under your direction that demonstrate the application of your philosophy?
Well, my philosophy about energy conservation is that it's here whether we like it or not. And it hurts us on a revenue sense, but it's good for the economy at large. It's good for society at large, for people to use less and you know, be more careful with how they use energy. But I think that we can be part of the conservation economy. Other than working on the FMEA Board of Directors on conservation issues and being an alternate at FMPA, I haven't been in charge of any conservation programs per se. What I would want to do is I'd want to look into, if I was CEO, being involved with rooftop solar, as I pointed out, possibly having a KUA energy store like Sacramento Municipal Utility District has. And I would love it if, customers come to us. We do a great job with our energy auditors that go out for free and go to our customers and say, here's why you're consuming so much energy. There's a real demand for that from our customers. And we do a good job of showing them where they can save money. I would love if we could say, and by the way, you can buy that gadget from us. You know, you need to do this. Think about it. And think about giving us a call. So my philosophy is we should try to maybe get in the conservation business more than we already are. And that's something that would be a major priority of mine as a CEO.
Okay. Would you describe a specific difficult personnel issue you addressed, such as harassment, discrimination, or other improper activity? What you did, the outcome, and what you learned from it? I guess this is right in your wheelhouse, isn't it?
It is. The toughest thing I saw was a pretty egregious incident of bullying. It wasn't sexual harassment. It wasn't racial. There were aspects that indicated it might be sexual orientation, but there was no proof that the person was what someone was saying. And it was really hard to deal with that because it was in a department that operationally was flawless with really great people. But this was an employee who was marginal. They were good enough to keep their job, but they weren't stars. A lot of our employees are stars, quite frankly. You see them every month. Employee of the Month. We have a crap. Everyone wants to work for KUA who lives around here. Everybody does because it's a great place to work. So we have really good people. But this was someone who was not a star, so to speak. And I think that left him vulnerable to some bullying. And, we looked into it and we found that it was legitimate, that it was happening. And what I learned from it, though, it was early in my career and I didn't handle it particularly well, in my opinion. Instead of partnering with management because management's heart was in the right place, I had more of a police, no offense, but I had more of the policeman, we're doing this wrong. And that's not effective. That's not effective. It made the situation worse for the department. It made my situation worse. It made it more tense. The only good thing is that I think that the person who was struggling felt a sense of justice from how we resolved it. But what I took from that is I could have done a lot better. I could have not taken myself quite so seriously, thought that I had all the answers and listened better. I'm glad that happened early in my career.
Okay. Is it me? Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Tell us about a responsibility in your current job or previous position that you really enjoyed. What responsibility did you enjoy the least?
Excellent. I love talking to people.
Really?
Yeah. I love talking to people. I really enjoy when we go to our rallies in Washington and Tallahassee, and I enjoy trying to make the case that we should pursue legislation, that legislators should pursue legislation or not. That's the favorite aspect of my job because I enjoy the interaction. As a corollary to that, I enjoy it when we're out in the community and I get to talk to customers or business leaders. I like being around people. I like to talk. My mom has called me Mr. Talk since I could talk, which I was a late bloomer. It's like about almost four. Now I'll never shut up. That's the part I like. The most. The part I like the least, it's dealing with other lawyers.
I can understand that.
Not.
We heard a certain comment back here.
Fred almost dropped.
not,
Is that workplace harassment?
not Council Cumbie. Thankfully, around here in Osceola County, I am the past president of the bar, and the folks here are great. The lawyers here are like us. We all treat each other, for the most part, professionally. We're friendly. We respect each other. But I've had the pleasure of dealing with lawyers from other parts of the state and other parts of the country, and they don't treat the other people with dignity. They look at it as war, not we both have a mutual problem we need to work through. So when I deal with an adversarial lawyer, that's the least favorite aspect of my job, I'm happy to deal with it. If someone wants to go that route, fine, let's go. But I prefer to see things worked out.
Thank you. Ray.
Okay, Grant, you're now the CEO of KUA. How would you plan to ensure KUA's sustainability through succession planning?
First thing I would do is come to the board and recommend that we form a succession planning committee. And if more than one board member wants to be on that committee, they'll meet in the sunshine. I'm not afraid of that. And I would recommend we establish that committee with at least one board member and certain staff members, both not just VPs, but VPs and managers, especially those that have expressed an interest or have an expertise in that. And we'd form that committee, and we'd look at every single position in KUA that merits a succession plan. That's basically every managerial position, some senior non-managerial positions. Basically, a position needs a succession plan where if that person hits the lottery tomorrow and says bye, we can go right in without missing. You're always going to miss something, but without the organization suffering trauma. So we look at every single position, and the committee would examine what kind of training is necessary to get someone up to speed in that position. And then we would identify, both with inquiries and just common sense and job descriptions, who are the individuals that would necessarily be right to fill that position. And then if the board approved it, we would have training. Every person that's slated to go in would have training for that position, starting as soon as the committee finished its work initially. From the CEO position, I think that eventually the CEO would need to do the same thing with the board's input. I know right now, sometimes we have, total delegation week, and that's great. That's great. But I think meaningful succession planning means that one of the CEO's direct reports goes to certain conferences, is actually given the keys to the car. And what I mean by that is absent. And our total delegation is kind of like that, but absent a real, real disaster or something catastrophic, they call the board chair. They call a board member if something comes up. They don't call me. So that's what I see as meaningful succession planning. But you've got to bring more than... I don't think it's going to be effective for me to just come and go, I think we should do this. I think that we as a team can come up with a process that makes sense and works and is robust. This is work. It's a lot of work.
Kathleen?
Okay, if selected as a general manager... what would KUA look like 10 years from now under your management?
Well, I kind of touched on that. I think that under my management, we'll have about 100,000 customers, and hopefully 5,000 of those customers, only 5,000, are net metering customers, but they're happy net metering customers because we're involved with them. We're helping them manage their loads. Maybe some of those customers we're reselling with FMPA's help. The panels, the solar panels, following OUC's possible lead, and where they're getting their power when they're not generating, if they're not getting it from stores, we're getting it from our solar farm. So we're getting more and more customers that can say, like the city of Kissimmee, we're 100% solar customers. Neo City is a thriving technology hub with 5,000, a minimum of 5,000 employees, up to 10, maybe 20 if things go really well. Maybe if we're lucky, we have a large anchor tenant that KUA helped the county attract by offering a 15-year commitment in return for all their capacity getting from solar, community solar. This is what Salt River Project did with Intel in Arizona. And maybe we can do something similar to that. That's what I'd like to see by 2030 or 2029. We're able to serve, I said 50, that might be, I don't know, if things get more efficient with solar technology, we might be able to have 50,000 of our customers, have our customers served by community solar, at least. But that is a tall order, because there aren't the same efficiencies with natural gas generation per customer yet as there is with solar. All our larger commercial customers are happy. None of them have left. None of them have islanded off and left the grid. Many of them have signed up for 15-year service contracts with us because we waived our line extension fees, or we offered them a competitive GSLD rate. Again, and those that are environmentally oriented, they're getting their power from community solar. We continue to have our minimum 85% customer satisfaction rating because of some of the things I mentioned, because we have great people that treat our customers right. But we've successfully deployed AMI. Now we're 10 years in, and people are really excited because with Jeff Gray's incredible technology gurus, we got more apps than people can count. They're happy because our customers are out in the field. We have the best customer service staff. I'm amazed at our customer service staff. I hear the horrible calls they sometimes get, and they're always so professional. They're called every name in the book, and they never lose their cool. So we take some of those talented people out, and we put them out in the community. They go to homeowners association meetings. They keep their pulse. They keep aware of the community's pulse. And we provide payment services and customer service right where close to where they live, whether it's at the Guevara Community Center, Good Samaritan. So we're very nimble. You know, we're not sitting here at Carroll Street waiting for things to happen to us. We are out there, we're proactive, and we're involved. Our customers are happy. The last two things is we do have a succession plan that works. We have people that are excited about their opportunities of someday succeeding to their supervisor. And we have even more effective collaboration between you board members and staff. We already effectively collaborate. We wouldn't have the 87% approval rating from our customers if we didn't. But I've noticed some disappointment, and I think it's deserved, with the supervisor performance assessment process that you get when you do the CEO's review. It's not his fault. That's just the system that we have in place. We have the directive that says you're not allowed to talk to folks. Well, I think we could make an exception for the CEO's review. And if I'm CEO, that's what you've been doing for 10 years. Every year, the board members they divvy up the vice presidents, and they talk directly one-on-one to them. I don't know who you're talking to. I'm not allowed to know. And you all bring that back. When the meeting comes to do my review, for 10 years, you've been bringing that back and telling me, Grant, you know, your direct reports say that, you know, you've got great energy and great passion, but despite what you say, for some reason, you don't micromanage, but you're not managing closely enough, you know. Those kinds of things. You could do this better, you could do that better. I think that any CEO worth his or her salt should not be afraid of board members talking to staff about his or her performance when the review comes up. If I'm treating people the right way, should have nothing to be afraid of.
Manny.
Yep. As general manager, will you have a problem with the individual board members approaching the VPs or employees, or vice versa, them approaching us directly?
Not in general. The only area where I would be concerned is if it's operational. For example, you know, I wouldn't want a board member to call someone up and say, hey, you know, you guys really, you need to go and lay conduit over in this neighborhood. You need to get right on it. Because that's really my role. But, I'm not afraid of vice presidents talking to direct reports. I'm not. But at the same time, if I'm doing a good job, you won't have to talk to them very often. If there's something going on, if you have reason not to have confidence in me, well, that's what can happen sometimes. I do see why we have the policy. What we don't want is, like I said, we don't want board members operating the utility. That's what the CEO is for. That's what the vice presidents are for. But I don't have a problem with the board member calling up the vice president and saying, you know, so how's it going? How's the strategic plan going? Are you happy with it? What do you think? You know, I would hope that that person would share that with me, but mm-hmm. I wouldn't make that a requirement.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I crunch with this. So,
what? Cringe. Crunch. Yeah, he means cringes.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know, this board is appointed by the city commission and the mayor. And this board, I hope that they will continue to understand where their duties lie and where they don't. The only one that they're allowed to tell them what to do is their CEO. A staff works for the CEO, and this board cannot be passing and crossing that line. Having that in mind, please tell us about your experience working with governing bodies such as this board of directors.
Well, I've worked with this governing body, and I've been a member of numerous governing bodies. And I have not, as a member of a governing body, I've not spoken to the CEO's direct reports. I haven't felt the need to, and I have honored the desire not to do that. In this governing body, I have observed that, especially because of the directive, there really is very little communication other than, you know, pleasantries and when we work directly on something or the CEO says it's okay. There hasn't been a lot of interaction between the board of directors and the direct reports of the vice presidents. I agree with you that we don't want policymakers getting in the weeds of operations. That'll gummy up the works. That belongs to the CEO. I do think this, that it can be challenging if you have, let's say it's 12 years from now or 15 years from now and I've retired. let's say you get a CEO where you're observing some things that really worry you. If you can't talk to people, it's really tough. So I think that should a vice president be fired because a board member contacts that vice president and says, I have reason to believe the CEO is using sick leave for ball games or something like that, and everybody sees it and everybody notices it, and it's going to be out in the paper tomorrow, and what do we do about it? I mean, I think a board member should be able to voice that concern. But not operations. To me, that's beyond operations. If it's something that's ethical or legal, or if they think the CEO is, you know, perhaps in the stages of dementia or something, this is 15 years from now, the board may need to talk to somebody. So it's tough. It's a tough question.
All right, I'm gonna do a follow up on that. I'm not gonna go in that avenue. What is your experience working with elected officials such as federal and state legislatures, federal and state administrations, and local governing bodies?
It's extensive, sir.
Right. They all have dementia. If you think yeah.
I've been doing this since 1996, off and on. New Mexico, I was involved. The most fun I've had is here. And you've all seen it directly as going up with you all to Washington for the APPA rally, interacting with Darren Soto and Marco Rubio and his staff. And by the way, today you mentioned that I just had a great conversation with Barry Cotton, that's Senator Rick Scott's regional director, and we're getting ready to get that meeting set up. That experience is extensive. The state legislature, I have good relationships with Mike LaRosa, John Cortez, and Victor Torres, great relationships with their staff as well. I enjoy interacting with the city commissioners and the county commissioners and the city manager and the county manager. I think that it's just something I'm passionate about. I just, it comes naturally to me, and I enjoy it.
Grant, what examples can you offer as evidence of your successful leadership style and skills? I'm sure it's been asked, but it has to be asked again because it's on the charts here.
Absolutely. Well, I start with the substation accident because that was where I was really tested the most, where the situation was immediate and you had to get out of your comfort zone really quick. I believe that leadership requires you to be accountable, and I think I showed that with the interaction with that park manager and the resident with Hurricane Charlie. You got to face the music sometime. And the person who should face the music with the customers, if at all possible, if it's serious enough, it has to be the CEO. You know, you can't leave your staff to deal with the toughest situations. Sometimes you have to say, this is mine, I got it. And that would be my leadership style. I would like to think that I bring a measure of integrity to the job, and that I lead by example.
Okay, very good. That actually is all the questions. Is there somebody else?
I have one more.
Two more. Oh, really? Because I have everybody checked off. Okay, Ethel, then you have some.
I'm not sure how this one will apply to you, but okay. Do you plan to bring in other candidates from the outside to replace you in case that you were promoted? Or will you use the existing employees?
Well, I have a fabulous existing employee, but she's got a couple of years left till she graduates law school and passes the bar. It's a good question, because if you do select me as CEO, another thing, you mentioned the 100 days, Director Ortega, and another thing that we will need to look at is that very issue. We're going to need to discuss whether we want to, you know, at least temporarily, maybe use some outside counsel. I could think of someone right away that, at least on a temporary basis, could ably fill the general counsel's shoes till we make a decision whether to go out for bid for general counsel services or hire someone inside. And in all those things, we have a fantastic paralegal, and I would keep her role in mind, who's going to be a future attorney not too long from now. So, that's going to be one of the first things I look at. And by the way, I think we'd want a good discussion of the reporting relationship. The general counsel, like any employee, is required to report to the CEO. The CEO has hiring and firing authority. But the board has the authority to name any employee they want to an officer. And under the charter, an officer cannot be fired without the board's consent. And so maybe that's something you want to look at. If we decide to go, if you hired me and we decided to go inside eventually and bring counsel inside, I think you might want to look at naming that person an officer. Because if you ever get that dreadful situation where a CEO doesn't have the board's best interest at heart or is doing something, and it happens in organizations out there, you see it, you're going to want the general counsel to be comfortable, feel that he or she can go to people necessary, the board chair, maybe the board in a public meeting, God forbid, and discuss the situation. So those are things that if you hire me that I want us to look at.
Ray?
Okay. What are your career objectives, and how does becoming president and general manager of KUA fulfill those objectives?
Well, you're going to laugh. Ironically, when I was 12, I wanted to be president of the United States.
So, it's only 20 people running. Why not another one?
That's what your hat raised.
I remember having a conversation with my priest. He said, Grant, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I said that. And he said, Grant, you were the first 12-year-old I ever met that ever wanted to be president of the United States. So he laughed. And, you know, this, I laugh, but I've always wanted to be a leader. I enjoy leading. I feel that I have the ability to inspire people. I feel that I have the ability to groom people, help people find pride and ownership and opportunity in what they do. What I really like about the CEO position is you are the ratepayers. You're the captain of this ship, and you belong to the ratepayers. And I belong to the ratepayers now, but as CEO, that relationship's even more personal. I've always wanted a career where I could do something that mattered to a large number of people. We have 77,000 people in the state. We have almost 2 million public power customers in the state and over 40 million public power customers in the country. And both in the general counsel and in the CEO position, I think you can actually affect change over large numbers of people. That's what I like about this career.
Kathleen, do you have another question?
No. Not allowed.
Manny?
No more questions.
So we are all done. Okay, wrapping it up, would you like to address us and ask us some questions? And then continue on telling us why you think you should be the best choice.
Yeah, I think we know each other well, thankfully. It's excellent, and it's just been a real privilege for me to get to work with each of you and going on our travels and fighting for our cause, which is the right and the just cause. Because of that familiarity, I don't really have any questions. I do want to reemphasize, I have received that 3 a.m. phone call, and I think that we responded well because I relied on the expertise of our staff. I remember as FMEA president, someone was saying, Vero Beach is just a huge pain in the neck. I wish they'd just go away. We don't need them. And I remember saying to that fellow member, well, they are a pain in the neck. And when 30,000 people want something, it's hard to say no to them. So they're probably going to go away. But I'm sorry, I don't take lightly seeing one public power, sister public power utility, privatized and leaving our industry. I don't take that lightly. And I won't take it lightly. I don't want to lose a single customer. I don't want to lose a single employee to superior recruitment from a neighboring utility or disciplinary matter. That experience from Hurricane Charlie really affected me. And it reminded me that I owe you, not just as general counsel, but if I'm your CEO as well, I'm going to owe you, our employees and our customers, my passion, my care, my compassion, my life's calling, but most importantly, I promise you, I will never take a single employee or a single customer for granted. I know you all have a tough decision. I'm familiar with, of course, my excellent colleagues, my internal colleagues. They're outstanding. And I know Rob McGarrah very well. I've had the opportunity to work with him, and he's a tremendous leader in our industry as well. So I don't envy you. You have a tough decision, but I know in my heart, whatever decision you make will be the right one.
Thank you, Grant.
I take that to go.
Yes, you may take it to go. And I think that no other business.
Is there anything that we need to say to each other before we go?
On the record?
Uh-huh.
No. Tomorrow, just understand how we're going to be doing this, the first, second, third, and show up, be prepared when you show up so we don't have to go long. Meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.